Chapter 30. To Keep From Harm. Three horses picked their way through the trackless forest, sharing five riders among them. Abile rode slumped against Rikashi's back, secured with a rope that wound about both their chests. She had awakened from her injuries in the night with an aching head and had fallen victim to spells of dizziness. Her eyes could not bear the brightness of the sun, so she wore Soria's cloak with the hood pulled low. Brannis watched them ride, wondering why he felt no twinge of jealousy. Rikashi's horse took the lead, setting an easy pace for his patient's comfort, allowing Brannis a view of them, as well as the horse carrying Soria and Thomas. The latter pair did not bother him either. Soria had agreed, with no small reluctance, to share her horse with Lord Harwick's son. The keep's stables had been emptied, leaving them just the three horses they had brought, and Rikashi insisted on looking after Abile. Soria could not deny it made the greatest sense, especially given the opinions she had occasionally voiced regarding the girl. To put a second rider with Brannis would have done the animal a disservice. As it stood, either of the other two horses only carried slightly more weight with two riders each. Thomas sat behind Soria, balanced just forward of the horse's rump, a veritable study in not quite touching a woman. She wore her armor lest there be any confusion about where his hands belonged, or did not. Brannis felt a strange emptiness, a lack of urgency that cast his thoughts adrift. Abile and Thomas were no longer in any danger. Their journey back was a mere formality. He had never felt so free of responsibility or purpose. Brannis's life had been laid out before him. Before the academy, his memories were vague, like stories he had been told. The academy had guided his studies, his activities. There was always some next thing beyond what he was doing. The School of Arms had been even more regimented, dictating the hour he rose, the hours he slept, and all the hours between. The knighthood and his service to the army had given him duty. He was far freer to set his daily actions, especially once he had gained a command of his own. But there were always orders to follow and missions to complete. His time since meeting with Roshan had been a whirlwind of plots, strategy, and logistics. What now? I can still help Kairos with his studies, I suppose, but that's no proper trade. So Thomas, Brannis called out, bringing his horse up not quite even with Soria's. What is it that we bring you back to, anyway? Your father always monopolizes any conversation that happens within earshot. What is it that occupies your days?
Scant little, I'm afraid. Officially, I manage my father's interests in Scar Harbor, but I have men that handle the details of it. My real job is to give those men a hard look in the eye and convince myself they aren't robbing me, Thomas replied with a self-deprecating chuckle.
Soria turned in the saddle. Brannis noticed that Thomas was leaning out of her way as she did so.
Thinking about signing on as an apprentice, Sir Erend? She teased.
Her face fell, eyes wide.
Oh, horse piss. We're being followed.
What? Brannis exclaimed, wheeling his horse around. He scanned the forest behind them.
I don't see anything.
Well, spit. If you'd been paying attention before, maybe you would have, Sori retorted. Rikashi, we've got to move.
I think not, Rikashi called back. She is in no condition. We must confront whoever it is.
Brannis still searched the trees for signs of the pursuers Soria had seen.
Thomas, he called over his shoulder, can you ride?
Of course, Thomas replied, indignant. I've won ribbons at it.
Wonderful. If we need any fences jumped, we'll have you to look to.
Take mine, then, and get Abile on it with you, Brannis told him hurriedly. Don't go far, else they circle around us to get to you. Keep just far enough away to stay out of harm's path.
Brannis swung himself off his mount, still feeling the shape of it between his thighs after a full morning in the saddle. Thomas climbed straight from Soria's horse to Brannis's, showing a spirit-buoying aptitude in keeping with his boast. Soria then moved to help Rikashi transfer Abile from his horse to Thomas's.
What's going on?
Abile asked as she was hoisted in front of Thomas. With no time to secure her properly, it was the safest place for her.
Not to worry, my dear, Thomas reassured her.
Our friends just appear not quite done with saving us.
They're about to do a bit more.
You shall be safe here with me in the interim.
Brannis stood with avalanche drawn, waiting. He saw Soria dismount and take cover behind a tree, and he followed suit. She saw him looking over at her.
Never learned to fight from horseback, she told him.
Thuk! An arrow embedded itself in the tree Soria sheltered behind, then two more. A voice called out something. It must have been Keshi, for he only understood a single word out of all of it. Tejuan.
Come out and make it easier on yourselves. We are Tejuan warriors, and you cannot escape us, the voice called out into the woods.
Soria swallowed hard, wondering what it would be like facing Tejuan brothers as mortal enemies. She hoped they were like the two that Parjek Ranhalmar had employed in Marker's Point. She suspected not. Tejuan mercenaries went as far as coin demanded. Keshis knew their value, and the best rarely had to travel far to earn great fortunes for the temples. A twin-born noblewoman? She had likely hired the best.
If you've come from the keep, you must have seen what we're capable of, Soria shouted back, not moving from behind the tree. You don't have to try to avenge your employer.
I don't know what happened at Transvar Keep, but if you are responsible, it is all the more reason to bring you to justice, the voice called back.
Soria could hear them coming. The horse's hooves had no artfulness in woodland sneaking. They crunched leaves and snapped twigs at every step.
What are they saying? Brannis asked.
They seem pretty intent on not going away quietly, Soria replied.
She reached back and drew her daggers. Make that dagger.
Gut me, I've only got the one left.
The other was somewhere amid the rubble of the keep they had destroyed.
They are moving to surround us, Rikashi shouted.
Can you get a count? Soria asked.
She looked all about. Surrounded by bowmen could mean trouble.
A dozen, perhaps, Rikashi replied.
We can't let them surround us completely. We need to keep Abile and Thomas protected, Brannis called back.
What's your plan then, Grand Marshal? Soria asked.
What plan indeed?
Brannis ransacked his memories, overturning shelves and spilling the cupboards out onto the floor. They had no bows, nor pistols or muskets. Their foes were mounted, and must have at least two bowmen among them, the rest carrying unknown arms. There was only one means of combat that put them at advantage.
We charge, Brannis answered.
Leading from the fore, Brannis stepped from behind his sheltering tree and sought the first hint of movement. He saw a pair of horsemen, still some ways off, obscured by the undergrowth. He broke into a run in their direction, screaming a wordless war cry to draw their attention. A pair of arrows whizzed his way, one missing cleanly, the other glancing off his breastplate. The two horsemen seemed unsurprised to see an armored foe still in pursuit. They dropped their bows and drew swords. They turned to meet him, their mounts restless in the face of a foe. Brannis chose at random, and veered for the horseman to his right. The Keshi warrior was armored like the others, in the thick, sleeveless leather armor that the Tejuan favored. By his attack, he was not much of a creative warrior. The Keshi reached across his horse to hack straight down at Brannis. Avalanche caught the blade, deflecting it wide. The Keshi was quick with his sword, and had a parry ready to line up with Brannis's counter. But Avalanche tore the blade from his hand before cutting the man in half. The second horseman had maneuvered himself around to come behind Brannis, but stopped short when he saw what happened to his companion. He urged his horse around a tree and put it between himself and Brannis. Brannis took a swipe at the horseman anyway, splintering the tree as Avalanche passed through. The tree fell straight down, at first, the upper portion clipping the newly formed stump and spiking into the earth near its own roots. It creaked and moaned, tangling with the branches of other trees as it toppled. Brannis and the horsemen fled to opposite sides of it.
Brannis! Soria screamed. Watch that sword of yours, or you'll bring the whole forest down on us.
Bring the whole forest down.
That was the answer. The horsemen had the advantage of speed over them, and bows.
Limit their options. Block their paths.
Brannis shouted back,
Just watch yourselves as they fall.
We want this fight on our terms. Someone's going to catch an arrow in the throat if we keep this up.
Brennus did catch another arrow, but his armor protected him. He darted for the next nearest tree and chopped it through as well. He repeated the process, trying to circle wide around the combat. With a few practice trees, he was even getting the hang of directing which way they fell, forming them into a rough defensive circle. One of the riders caught on to his plan, or at least understood the threat that dozens of falling trees presented. Brennus turned to see one of the horses vault a fallen tree, the rider's spear leading like a lance. Instinct overrode sense, and Brennus batted the spear away, only to be trampled by the horse. He hit the ground,
and a mass of horseflesh passed him by.
He flailed about with his blade and heard an equine shriek of agony, followed by a clatter to the ground. Brennus rolled over to push himself to his feet, scrambling when he saw that the rider had disentangled himself from his butchered horse and was advancing. The spear was gone, discarded, and the rider had drawn two long daggers. The rider called out to him, but it was nothing but garbled sounds to Brennus's ears.
"Sorry, friend, I'm just a Cadran, a long way from home," Brennus remarked.
It seemed to matter little, telling a man who could not understand him and who would shortly be dead. His opponent spoke again, but all Brennus understood was the word Cadran. Brennus took a step back. He was unprepared for that one word to ring true. The language sounded different as well, not quite like the Keshi tongue whose cadence and sounds were growing familiar, if no more understandable.
"You, Cadran," the rider said, switching to speaking Cadran after Brennus had no reaction. Brennus nodded. "Ah, I Gelk, you die."
"Not today, I think," Brennus replied. The Gelkin twinborn took up a stance that Brennus recognized. It was one that Soria used, even down to the choice of daggers. This twinborn was Tejuan trained. Rakashi counted himself fortunate to have such clever allies. From the moment Brennus's sword first cut a tree, Rakashi thought to turn the battlefield into a clutter of fallen oaks and maples. He had done little before then but play the deer for his huntsman foes. A bow is a wonderful weapon for hunting, and for holding fortifications against massed troops. It begins to have its failings against targets who are aware of the bowmen, and do nothing but keep to cover and dodge. There was little else he could do without giving them too good a target. Unlike Soria and Brennus, he was unprotected. When the trees began to rain, he was able to watch their dying sources with his patched eye. With his good eye, he kept track of his bowmen, perched on nervous horses that were unsure how to react to the strangeness of a falling forest. He kept himself to the leafy ends of the trees, concealing himself behind branches. When one of the horsemen leaped to his side of a tree, he dove and rolled under to switch sides once more. After the fourth time leaping a falling tree, one horse missed its footing on the landing, spilling its rider. Rakashi rolled back onto the horse's side of the tree and closed the distance to the rider. The bowman was remarkable in his concentration. He had kept his bow intact through the fall, and even from lying on his side, knocked an arrow. Rakashi did not dodge. He waited for the bowman to take his measure and watched his aim. If the man were to assume Rakashi lacked depth perception due to his patched eye, he would find himself wrong. If an archer were to wager his life that a one-eyed Tikalishman could not place his half-spear to deflect an arrow mid-flight, he might find himself dying quite by surprise, with a half-spear in his throat.
"Thomas, what's going on?" Abile asked,
a tremor of panic rising in her voice.
"Well, my Keshi is poor at best, but I must imagine that there is an unrescue attempt afoot," Thomas replied. "I'm not quite sure where they would take us, since our last accommodations are a mountain of rubble. But Kesh is big enough that they'd find a place, I'm sure."
"What about Sir Erend, Lady Soria, and the Tikalish fellow?" Abile asked.
"Well, they seem to be faring well thus far. I've taken us a bit wayward of the fray, of course, so I can't get much of a view. You can hear as well as I, though, that they still shout to one another."
Thomas looked about. The others were far more a threat than he was, and he was not fleeing, so the riders had paid him scant attention.
One of them took that moment to crash by, just a few lengths of a horse from where they sat.
"What's this now?" Thomas exclaimed. "I think I recognized that one. These fellows are the guards Lady Skull kept with her on our ride south. And to think, we shared tea with some of them."
Soria's opponents circled her, keeping well out of her lunging reach. They had dismounted unwillingly, their horses dead nearby. One wielded a long axe in two hands. The other stood unarmed, the greater threat. Both had the san, the source, of a Tezuan adept, and the balance and poise to show they were trained.
"You are one of ours,"
the unarmed Tezuan said to her.
"We should trade names, the better to sell our services to our next employer, whoever proves the stronger here. I assume you are from one of those mongrel schools. More's the pity."
"I am Soria Coinblade, and no, I didn't study in the north," Soria said, spitting on the ground to punctuate her statement. "I trained at the Temple of the Sun."
"Liar! The Temple of the Sun would never take in a northerner,"
the Tezuan shot back.
"You get no name from me until I get a proper introduction from you."
"Suit yourself," Soria replied. "Maybe when you lay dying, you'll change your mind. Frankly, I don't think I'll name the likes of you in my boasts."
"You little whore,"
the unarmed Tezuan exclaimed.
He rushed her. In her ether vision, Soria saw the one with the axe coming for her as well. Still facing the unarmed Tezuan, she flung her lone dagger behind her. The axe wielder was caught unawares, and the dagger buried itself in his chest. The remaining Tezuan closed the distance to Soria and began an onslaught. His punches came in a blur, and his kicks came in stride, never overbalancing him. Soria kept up with him by sheer force of ether, speeding her hands, quickening her ducks and dodges. The Tezuan was a better fighter than Mother Stina had ever been. Soria still had tricks of her own when it became clear that speed and technique alone were not going to be enough. Soria allowed a punch to land, a clean shot, right to her face. There was a quick flash as her shielding spell caught the blow, which barely turned her jaw. She leaned into the blow, gaining the reach to put a knee to her foe's chest and grab hold of his wrist. Even through the hardened leather armor, she heard his ribs crunch. The force of the blow would have flung the man away from her, but she had hold of him by the arm, and he could only stumble that far from her. He tried to jerk his arm free, but he was larger than Soria, and she allowed herself to be pulled toward him. The kick that followed broke the man's neck. Soria allowed the dead man to drop to the ground. She took up her dagger from the axe wielder's body as she gathered her breath once more. Another horse approached, and she readied to throw the dagger at its rider.
"Well fought, Soria," the man complimented her.
He had no weapon, nor had any about his person that she could see. There was something familiar in his face, though.
"I can only imagine how formidable you would have become if you had finished your training. You fight with a novice's skills, but the san of a dragon."
"I've seen a dragon, and I think you overestimate me," Soria replied.
"He must have been at my temple, but who is he?"
The man laughed. It was the easy, genuine laugh of a man at ease. "The man you killed was named Jal. He was quite good. You don't know who I am, do you?
Has it been so long, Soria, that you have forgotten me?
I put the temple behind me. I kept what I needed to know. I said I left all grudges behind me."
"Yes," the Tezuan said, "but you also said you might remember friendships."
Soria shrugged. The Tezuan frowned.
"I suppose this might be easier then," he said.
The Tezuan got off his horse. Soria waited as he tied the reins to a branch of one of the fallen trees.
"Knowing you held no affection for me, I will not have my heart holding me back."
Soria searched the little wardrobe in her mind for a face that might have been a younger version of this Tezuan warrior's, but came away with nothing. It was an ill-kempt wardrobe, cluttered with memories of two childhoods. It was filled with moonlit boat rides for two, rides in the countryside,
the wonders of nascent magical skills developing,
and occasionally, here and there, memories of a dusty stone temple run by grim disciplinarians. The faces from the latter were covered in dust. Soria studied his source and was shocked. It was something that belonged in Vaedrus, not Tellurac. She had to remind herself that the same could be said of her own, but that was scant comfort when that same distinction accounted for her advantage in combat over nearly every opponent she had faced. The Tejuan held his palms out before her and focused. She knew he was inspecting her source in much the same way.
"Oh, wonderful! I had never mastered the sand sense while you were still at the temple, Soria. But now I see why you're always so strong, despite being so sloppy," the Tejuan said.
"I'll give you the same choice your friend had. If you want to give me your name, fine. If not, I'll either have it from your dying breath or not at all," Soria told him. She strengthened her shielding spell, drawing from her own source as the Tejuan taught. The Tejuan's eyes widened.
"That trick they never taught. You learned that somewhere else, didn't you?" the Tejuan asked.
Soria was tempted to slide back into ether vision, just to keep that smirking, self-congratulatory smile out of her sight.
"Come now, Soria. Who else are you?"
Soria's blood chilled.
This pig-sticking bastard is twin-born.
She redoubled her efforts to remember him, but caught nothing but wind. The boys at the temple kept their heads clean-shaven. The shoulder-length mop of golden locks and the sculpted beard sharpening his chin could have hidden any childhood acquaintance.
"Not talking, eh?" he said.
He took a passive Tejuan stance.
"Fine, but you are to be killed by Barum, whom you once claimed to love."
Barum.
She had been a girl, not yet 10, when she had claimed to fancy Barum. It was imitation of the older girls and their illicit affections. She and Barum had been playmates, as much as playing was allowed at the Temple of the Sun, but nothing more.
I guess it meant more to him than to me.
"Sorry, don't recall the name," she said.
Barum's face contorted in a fury.
"Liar!"
he exclaimed and rushed her. He fought like Jahl, a blur of motion that Soria fought to keep up with. More than one blow of his rang against her shielding spell. He was faster than her, and his technique flawless. Soria backed away as she defended, giving ground to buy time. She found a fallen tree and ducked beneath it, forcing Barum to either go over or under it to follow her. He leaped over the trunk, and Soria dove back under. She was relieved to find she was at least nimbler afoot.
"Cowardice! Is this how you act when overmatched?" Barum taunted.
"Pride isn't going to get me killed today," Soria promised herself.
She glanced around the forest. All she saw was the horse with Abile and Thomas. The noble fop had acquired a sword from somewhere and was brandishing it at the trees. She heard but could not see Brannis and Rikashi. The whole of the area was a roving battle.
"Enough of this," Barum shouted,
after the third time back and forth across the same tree. He went over, she went under. He went under, she went over.
"Iket Jimagu Denpek Wanapi," she heard Barum chant.
"Merciful Tancha, he's a sorcerer."
Soria dove to the side as the firebolts flew. One caught her in the side, another in the small of her back. She felt them gnaw at her shielding spells, sapping her defenses. The others missed, to splash among the brush.
"Where will you hide now?" Barum asked.
The forest began to burn. The Gelkin lunged, and Brannis swept Avalanche out to meet him. The lunge had been a feint, though, and the Tejuan twinborn was already out of reach before the blade was even close. The Gelkin shook his head slowly, waggling a finger.
"Trees move not. I do," the Gelkin said.
The man was smaller than Rikashi, but Brannis knew that it was more of an advantage than a hindrance. He could have stood in against an ogre, but a foe he could not catch was a foe he could not harm. Brannis stepped forward and took a quick swipe at the Gelkin. He hopped back. Brannis quick-stepped in behind the first strike to catch the Gelkin off guard, but the man turned his hips and sprinted out of reach, stopping just after Brannis's burst of pursuit ended. The Gelkin looked around and found a long axe lying near one of his dead comrades. He took it up and brandished it at Brannis. Brannis slashed at the axe, trying to cut the head free of the shaft, but the Gelkin ducked the weapon out of the way.
"You'll never kill me at this rate," Brannis taunted,
in Cadran. The Gelkin just smiled and continued holding the axe blade just beyond his reach. It was a crude weapon, too heavy for a man of his size to wield properly. The axe was double-headed, with a short spike on the end of the shaft. It was the latter that seemed most of interest to the Gelkin twinborn. He wielded the axe like an overbalanced spear. Brannis took a new approach. He tried to steer the man's flight. He swiped to one side or the other, trying to back the man against a tree. It would only take a moment's error to cost the man his life, Brannis knew. The flaw in the man's retreat seemed apparent when Brannis lined him up with an oak twice as wide as his shoulders. Even if the man veered left or right as he backed away, the tree would block him. Brannis made what should have been the final lunge. The man hopped back, right into the tree, but with his feet up. The Gelkin kicked against the trunk, becoming a spear, axe blade leading. The point of the spike deflected off Brannis's gorget, and the curved backside of one axe blade wedged itself about his neck, grasping at him like a noose. Brannis was lifted from his feet by his own momentum and deposited on his back. The Gelkin continued on past Brannis, vaulting over him by the axe shaft, placing the whole of his weight on Brannis's neck. A flick of avalanche snapped the blade and sent the man sprawling. Brannis arose, trying to feel at his neck through his armor, and found that the quicksilver and gold suit had prevented a certain death. The Gelkin was looking on wide-eyed, holding half an axe shaft as a makeshift sword. Brannis took a step forward, and the Gelkin hopped back an equal distance.
"You don't want to fight?" Brannis asked.
An idea sprang to mind, a wicked idea. "I am a demon. I will burn the whole forest down around us."
"Halatu, Dunaxi, Tukaso, Zata Gotagi," Brannis chanted, spreading his arms wide and looking to the sky.
He hoped that the Gelkin knew enough magic from the other side to recognize a hellfire spell. He was reciting it slower than even an academy lecturer. Not that that particular spell was part of any curriculum. In the hope that the man would prefer his chances in close combat over being burned alive. The Gelkin hesitated. Brannis suspected he was being examined in the ether. There was a good chance, he suspected, that his armor might obscure his sickly source behind a wall of more potent ether. If not given a close examination, the claim of demonhood might seem plausible.
"No, stop!" the Gelkin cried.
He came at Brannis in a headlong rush. To the man's credit, had Brannis truly been in the midst of such a spell as he claimed, he would not have finished it. The man's fist turned Brannis's helmet aside before he could even bring Avalanche around. The Gelkin likely died a hero's death, to his mind, saving his companions from a mad demon's fires. Rakashi watched the remaining battles from the crook of a once mighty oak's branches. He stood with his half-spear in one hand, holding his balance with the other, concealed among the leaves. Five of the horsemen were dead by his blade, but he counted himself fortunate. He had not run into any of the Tejuan twinborn that Brannis and Soria had found. They were fascinating to watch, but deadly. He had seen most of Brannis's last battle, and now watched Soria. The temptation was strong to rush to her aid, but it was a futile gesture. It would likely get him killed and anger Soria even if it did not. Any help ought to come from a more welcome hand.
"Brannis," Rakashi called out. "Soria has found a sorcerer among our foes." A sorcerer.
Brannis's eyes went wide. He was numb to the ether and preoccupied with his own battles. Had he really been so oblivious to the presence of magic at work in the fight? He raced toward the crunching sounds of feet trampling leaves, pausing only to hack his way through his own field of arboreal debris. He heard the crackle of fire as he approached.
"Iket, Jimagu, Denpek, Wanapi,"
Brannis heard the chant.
What fool actually uses fire in the woodlands?
That had been the barb in his own ruse. Brannis chopped twice through a fallen tree and kicked the resulting log out of his way. Once through the gap, he had his answer. The Tejuan sorcerer was flinging firebolts in Soria's direction, and it was all she could do to evade them. Little bonfires were already ablaze in the brush all around.
Brannis, look out!
Soria warned. The sorcerer turned his way and stepped back. Brannis broke into a run.
Kolo Ketengsu Mafaira,
the sorcerer spoke. Brannis put his arm up to shield his face, not recognizing the spell until it was too late. His charge faltered as the ground gave way beneath him, watery as a thick soup. It hardened again with Brannis chest deep in the ground. The sorcerer made some remark in Keshi that was lost on him, then turned to face Soria.
Iket Jimegu Dinpek.
A spray of dirt, rocks, and small plants showered the Tejuan sorcerer as avalanche swept up great furrows of earth at him. The firebolts never materialized, and the sorcerer stumbled back, clutching his head. Curses can be conveyed through tone and timbre alone, breaking even the sturdiest of language barriers. The Keshi language was no exception.
Haksu Tenmal Sarksu Wigam,
Soria chanted, twisting her fingers in the direction of the sorcerer. A lick of indigo lightning sputtered from her hand, ending in midair several paces short of the sorcerer, who was gathering himself after his misspent spell. Soria swore using the same Keshi curses, but in a prettier voice. Soria charged in, and the Tejuan sorcerer set himself in a warrior stance to defend himself with his fists. Brannis began working furiously with Avalanche to loosen the earth all around him, enough to escape. The sorcerer took the initiative, not waiting for Soria's attack. He kicked out. Soria's second attempt at the spell was silent. The lightning was black as it leapt from her hand to slam into the Tejuan sorcerer. He was thrown back and lay twitching and smoking on the forest floor before lying still.
Stupid hands, Soria groused. They just don't get enough practice at all that wiggling you Vaedrans use.
She gave Brannis a wink and knelt to help him up out of his hole. They set about taking stock of their losses. Rakashi came down from his perch and began rounding up however many horses could still be found alive. Brannis cleared paths among the fallen trees to make searching easier. They had little time, for the fires had already spread beyond what Soria's limited magic could be expected to extinguish.
That was marvelous,
Thomas called out as he rode over with Abele still tucked safely in front of him.
You folk are amazing protectors. I must see that Father finds you work in some capacity.
You bloody that sword yourself? Brannis asked.
Thomas was riding with one hand to the reins and a bared sword in the other, red halfway to the hilt.
I haven't fenced since I was a lad, but that poor rascal didn't know that, eh?
Thomas said. His face was aglow. He was perched on a horse with his lady in his lap, having just slain a brigand to defend her. Brannis saw Abele twist in Thomas's loose grasp and kiss him. He was a good man. Perhaps he was not a terribly useful one, but he could manage in dire need, and that counted for something. Abele was in good hands. Brannis turned and left them to their affections.